Hello, and welcome to the Equitopia podcast series. My name is Caroline Hegarty, founder of Equitopia. Today, I'm delighted to talk with horse behaviour consultant Dr. Robin Foster. Robin's professional experience spans 3 decades, during which time she has worked as a professor of psychology, teaching and conducting research in animal and equine learning and behaviour. Throughout her career, she has also taken care not to neglect the all-important practical work. This includes 7 years consulting on equine behaviour problems, working as a stable groom and assistant trainer, and giving lessons on basic horsemanship. As usual, I began by asking Robin about when she got involved with horses.
Well, I don't know exactly when or how. Horses have been part of my life as long as I can remember. My cousin lived on a dairy farm, and she is a horse professional. Since I've known her, she's had horses, and so my sister and I spent our summers riding horses, sleeping with horses, and talking horses all the time. None of that was disciplinary, just kind of general Western riding and trail riding, but it was a great start.
Everyone I've interviewed so far has had a similar introduction to horsemanship. Without exception, everyone talks about warm, fuzzy memories of simple fun with family and friends, special times, made all the more special by having a horse involved. No one yet has said something like, "I've always wanted to win a medal," or "My mom forced me to take riding lessons and I got to like riding over time." The starting point for everyone so far, including me, is having fun and embracing horsemanship as one of the things that makes life so special. I next asked Robin to tell me how she got involved with equestrianism professionally.
I got back more involved with horses a little bit later in my career, and it was clear to me at that point, it was about 20 years ago now, that there was some discrepancy between what I was teaching in my animal learning and behavior courses in terms of kind of the current state of research and practice in animal welfare, and what was actually being done in training horses and managing horses and the general philosophies about training and managing horses. So that started me on a road of doing some research projects with horses and then very quickly switching over completely to owning horses again, of course, and working with horses exclusively in my academic research. During that time, what I was doing primarily research, which was very satisfying, and the barns that I was working with were quite open to the research I was doing, which had a lot to do with, of course, learning and behavior. But I became a horse behavior consultant when I retired from full-time teaching. I still teach and I'm still a professor, but no longer teach full-time, and started a business as a horse behavior consultant.
The disconnect between research and practice is common in many areas. It's hard to find time or motivation to keep abreast of research outcomes when we would much rather collapse on the sofa after a long day's work. But this is a problem if we want to progress. If we keep doing the same things over and over again, then how can we improve? At Equitopia, we try to bridge the gap between research and practice through our monthly research revealed essays. We identify studies that are relevant to equestrians and summarize the findings. Extracting the important points from studies and serving them up as part of the monthly content mix for Equitopia members. Back to Robin. Many equestrians may not understand the value of an equine behavior consultant, so I asked her about her experience when she was getting started.
I was a little surprised at how unaware trainers and veterinarians were about what behavior consultants do. And the reason I was surprised is that in the companion animal dog and cat world, and I'm involved in that to some extent as well, the behavior health of a companion animal is often achieved through a collaborative relationship between the veterinarian, trainer, and behaviorist. And that triad was not only non-existent in the equine world, but in fact, nobody knew even what a behaviorist was or what a behaviorist did. So that was a big challenge, was Spending a lot of time convincing people that I had a particular role in equine behavior health, and then explaining exactly what that role was. And that just felt a little odd and was hard. So that's part of what sparked my move into this unacknowledged and unrecognized part of the horse industry. But, you know, many, many people that I worked with were quite eager to embrace these more humane principles, and especially with regard to horses that they were struggling with behavior issues.
It is really encouraging to know that more and more people are coming on board to look for and learn about more humane principles and practices. I found it interesting, though, to hear Robin talk about how dealing with behavior issues in our cats and dogs has come to be normal compared to our attitudes and practices when dealing with horses. I wonder if this is because we have a longer tradition of cats and dogs living with us. They ride in our cars with us, we take them with us throughout the day, we might see them first thing in the morning, last thing at night, having that constant relationship with them. So we may be more open to looking after a very broad set of needs that includes their behavior. Then on the other hand, we see our horses at the barn, ride them once a day or a few times a week, but instead of just hanging out with our horse, a lot of that limited time with them goes on attending to their physical needs, making sure they have enough hay, water, nutrition, riding them, making sure they're locked up when they're sick or injured, that kind of thing. The relationship is different, and we often end up just looking after their physical welfare with less consideration for their emotional health and welfare. I went on to ask Robin to tell me about any pushback she encountered from other professionals about her methods.
Some pushback that I got early on came from a very unexpected place. I was boarding a horse at a farm and she had a debilitating stifle injury, so I wanted to take lessons. And it was also a farm where I was doing some research, and as part of that research, I was doing counter conditioning, which is where you pair something that's a horse is fearful of with something that the horse really likes, like food. So I was using food in that counter conditioning research. And when my horse was injured, I approached the trainer and said that I wanted to take lessons while she was injured because she was on a very long rehab. And the trainer refused to let me take lessons because I used treats with horses. And so I wasn't able to take lessons from her. It was a very interesting issue. Anyways, some of the early challenges I faced too as a behavior consultant professionally were primarily had to do with the distance traveled that I had to travel to horses. So even though I'm in a horsey community, the consultations that I was called in on were distributed over, you know, the entire northwest part of the state of Washington. And so with that travel distance, I would go see a client, you know, spend the good part of the day there, work with the client on, you know, both analyzing what the underlying issues were and then setting up a behavior modification program. But because I was so far and I don't have a board and train kind of facility, I wasn't able to really follow up with the training. And in many cases, having me participate early on in the initial training is more successful. And it lets me both work with the horse and teach the horse some skills, and oftentimes working with the client and teaching the client some skills. And so what I found was with this structure, I would end up with a horse that didn't know what to do, a client that didn't know what to do, and then putting those two together with little information or practice. And so that was a really big challenge to the outcome, and I had to work through that. I mitigate some of that now we still have the distance problem, but I mitigate some of that problem by using remote consultations, which is surprisingly much more effective than one would ever imagine.
I'm not surprised that remote consultations are so valuable. We can achieve so much through technology. In the last couple of years, I've been so delighted with the feedback we get about our online courses, webinars, and videos, and most recently about the fully online conference we held during the COVID-19 lockdown. It was absolutely fantastic. I asked Robin to give me some examples of behavior issues she has dealt with her own horses.
I've had quite a few horses because as a thoroughbred racehorse breeder and owner, I've had not dozens, but I've had a few who, and some of them I still own, some I do not. But I want to just talk about two horses in particular and some of the challenges I faced with them. One horse was a horse that I got very early in my sort of return to professional, becoming a professional horse person. And it was a paint mare, and I did want a horse to trail ride. And so I was looking at, you know, paints and quarter horses and other good Western type trail horses. So I went to see a paint mare, and she seemed very lovely. So I went out to see her a couple of times, and it became really evident to me that the horse was being ridden by a relatively inexperienced rider with very harsh equipment and style. It wasn't traumatic, but it was very harsh. And she was fearful and really worked very hard to do everything she could to escape the aids. So even though I didn't want a project horse, I immediately said, I'll take that horse, and took her back home and started over. And, you know, reschooled her, basically took all the tack off, had a halter, got on her back, and we started from ground zero. She is a wonderful horse, and all of that behavior was a result of just harsh tack and harsh handling. And so we've overcome that. Another horse that I wanted to just share with you is a gelding that I bred, and his name is Thunder. He was had a crazy personality, very curious, kind of impulsive. This is a thoroughbred, and I just thought his antics were funny. I thought they were funny. I just was very attached to him. He was a nice horse, but he had kind of put up with a lot of nonsense. And I don't know if you have ever been to a training barn, but many grooms don't really appreciate putting up with a lot of nonsense and would correct him. And so there was kind of a bit of tension with me encouraging the grooms not to correct him and to, you know, be more patient with him, and them trying to get the job done. So that was an interesting challenge for me because, you know, I didn't obviously want my horse to be trained in a manner where his, what I thought was amusing, curious behavior was being corrected. So those are the two horses I wanted to mention.
These are great stories and really demonstrate the value of being kind to our horses and enjoying their quirkiness and little habits that make them unique and special. As our Equitopia community grows, I find it interesting to be reminded of how we all connect. So I asked Robin about how she came on board.
So how did I find my way to Equitopia? Well, a colleague of mine, Lauren Fraser, who is featured in at least one video that Equitopia put out years ago, she introduced me to Equitopia, and that sort of blossomed into a quite collaborative friendship and relationship with the organization that I'm grateful to have. It's a wonderful organization.
I then asked Robin if she sees improvements in the equestrian world and what they are.
As far as improvement in the equestrian world over the past few years, I have to say that in the more than two decades that I have been working with horses at some level professionally, the changes have been gradual but very steady, more to moving in the direction of an emphasis on the horse-human relationship, which is fantastic, which reframes what the horse is and how the horse fits into that horse-human relationship, as well as a greater interest in equine welfare. And that interest in equine welfare has changed equitation and improved equitation in a way that makes it much more ethical. And some other examples of welfare interest is the great advances in understanding and application of equine enrichment. Lauren Fraser, who I mentioned earlier, coined the phrase friends, forage, and freedom. And those are three essential pieces of the equine welfare puzzle that need to be fulfilled.
I then asked how she sees the future of equestrianism and where the gaps are.
I think the future looks kind of fantastic. We're seeing all these changes in attitudes and practices, training practices toward horses. In terms of what things still need to be done, as a behavioral scientist, I only have one short answer for that. I think we need more science to inform practice.
As we are preparing a book list for equestrians based on all the recommendations of people I am interviewing in the podcast, I asked Robin to share some of her top picks.
I have four books that I wanted to recommend, but one of them is Equitation Science by Dr. Paul McGreevy, Jan Winther Christensen, Uta Koning von Burstel, and Andrew McLean, and this is by Wiley Blackman. And Equitation Science was published in 2018 and is a general, all-around fantastic reference for really everything horse behavior that you might want to know. And for people who are maybe more academically minded and perhaps a little bit more interested in the science behind the behavior, another book is Equine Behavior, A Guide for Veterinarians and Equine Scientists, second edition. And this is by Dr. Paul McGreevy and was put out by Sanders Elsevier Press. And it is a really fantastic overall reference book that I refer to regularly. Some books that I would recommend for equine behavior include Bonnie Beaver's Equine Behavioral Medicine, and that is a 2019 publication put out by Academic Press. Another book that is one of my favorite books on equine welfare is by Dr. Gerd Huschmann, and that is The Tug of War, Classical versus Modern Dressage. And that was recommended to me many years ago when it first came out, and I keep it by my side and look at it frequently. Unfortunately, despite the book's powerful message, many dressage principles for training have not changed.
Finally, I asked Robin for some advice she could give to professionals or what she would be looking for in members of an equine team.
One is to be flexible and open-minded about other practices and possibilities. We are all just individuals and we all have a limited set of experiences and a limited knowledge, no matter how vast it may seem in some ways. And there are many opportunities to learn from others in our own discipline and in other disciplines. So I'm always looking for someone and respect someone who is open-minded and considerate of those approaches. And at the same time, respectful of other people's skills. So some people, of course, have a skill set and an experience that is different from ours, and to respect that. The other thing I look for in that group of people is that everyone works collaboratively. We all of those professions have something to contribute to the well-being and the health of our equine companions. And so the collaborative effort and being on board with the same overarching goal to improve equine welfare is important to me.
I hope you enjoyed listening to Robin. I know I did. Talking to her, I was especially reminded of the relationship aspect of equestrianism. Thinking back on my earliest memories involving horses reminds me of why I still want to be an equestrian and be around horses. Why not take a minute and think back on your earliest memories involving horses? What do you remember? How did it start? Who were you with? How did you feel? Did your passion for horses start with an emotional bond? Now think about your relationship with your horse today. Do you still take the time or have the time to just hang out with your horse? To really enjoy being with him or her? Really looking and seeing your horse? Not just as an animal you keep alive and are responsible for, but almost as a friend. as a being that has the potential to connect you and your happiest childhood memories. At Equitopia, we talk about horses and humans in harmony. Are you in harmony with your horse? How does that influence the type of equestrian you are? Something to think about. So with that, we come to the end of another episode. I hope you enjoyed listening. Tune in again next month for more from the horse's mouth.